It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And I got nothing for this. I wasn't even expecting we were going to have to do this again this soon. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that, maybe it's the only podcast in the world. I don't know. We don't have podcasts over here. It could be the only one. The only podcast in the world. There you go. Congratulations. I'm Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
You guys always think it's weird that we say this, because, but people here do refer to themselves as Evil.
Sure.
Whoever.
It's like a title.
Yeah. I think it's similar to how you guys use Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah,
like
probably.
Esquire.
Yeah. Stuff like that.
It would be freaky if somebody didn't. But, anyway, clearly it's that time again. Somebody fucked up something. So we're here. For those of you who have never heard this show before, good job. Keep it up. Leave now. For those of you who won't take my brilliant advice, here's how the show works. There's a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And presumably someone writes that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, I don't know, haikus, sonnets, manifestos, dirty limericks, I presume.
Things like that.
Yes, things like that. You stole my line. just because I add lines don't mean you get to take the ones that were already there.
Okay.
The hat on its own magically transmogrifies those note cards. transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. Manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its evil servants, as opposed to the other guys, who were the good servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're sick of it. Do that for about an hour. That's the show. It's normally not us, it's those other guys, but when one of them has a date or something, I don't know, can't miss the latest episode of Quincy.
Quincy?
We get pulled into this. And to answer your next question, I don't know. I don't know why that was my go-to there. The weird part is, some part of my brain thinks I meant to say Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, and the cues just hit weird. I'm not sure. Because I'm also not sure how it's an insult exactly. Quincy was not a bad show.
Did you even ever see it?
Yeah, in syndication. And okay. Also when I was this big.
I was going to say.
But yeah.
It seems like that was before your time, but I don't know.
I saw it seldom enough and late enough from it that I was like, why is the sloppy dude from The Odd Couple a doctor?
Sloppy dude.
That's who? The sloppy dude from The Odd Couple. Have you ever seen that play performed, like, live?
No.
I have, so that makes me better than you. No, there was a high school, it wasn't mine, it was actually my best friend in high school transferred schools, and so she was in her theater department, so I would go see all of their stuff. And it was a much smaller theater department. It was like a very small group of like hardcore theater geeks, as opposed to ours, which put on these big musicals, and you know, we had cheerleaders in theater and stuff like that. Theirs was like just the drama kids, like the eight of them kind of thing. And they did The Odd Couple, but I don't know if you're aware of this, there's a gender flipped version of The Odd Couple. No. That I think he wrote.
Oh.
And it's almost exactly the same. Instead of Oscar and Felix, it's Olive and, I don't know, Fiona or something. It's something else like that. And especially all the bits that are just them, the lines are pretty much exactly the same. And then in the original Odd Couple play, they have two women over that they're trying to sort of schmooze and stuff.
Right.
And in the other version, they have two men over that they're trying to schmooze. And their backstories are different.
Mm-hmm.
The two men in particular, they are from Spain. Mm. And so we have a lot about their accents. And so that those scenes are kind of different in some ways. But they're pretty similar. And they were doing alternate nights. They would switch.
Mm.
And I went to enough that I saw both. And it was very interesting to see, like, back-to-back these two things. But I don't know why I'm there. Anyway.
He also wrote an evil version.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Was it just called The Evil Couple? Or?
Well, it's still The Odd Couple.
All right.
Just everybody has goatees.
Oh. But otherwise...
pretty much the same. Same.
Wow.
But it's interesting to watch...
Evil Neil Simon was lazy as hell.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch them back to back and see how the differences.
Good and evil. Yeah. And yeah.
I mean, you think it's just about the goatees, but there's little subtle things.
There's a bit where Oscar gets mad about Felix and his stupid spaghetti. He's eating some pasta, and he throws it against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Felix is like, Oscar, you know this is linguine. It's not spaghetti.
Right.
He's not mad that he threw it. He's just mad that he got the wrong pasta. And one time when I watched it, Oscar fucked up and said, "You and your damn linguine." And then, but the problem is, it's real, and you can see it, and that's clearly what it is. And so there's just this awkward pause, and then finally Oscar says, "I mean spaghetti," and then Felix is like, "Oscar." What's like? I want to be like, you knew it 5 seconds ago.
You just said it.
I don't know how we got onto this.
I don't know either.
I thought I had a non-hat question thing to mention. I forgot what it was. I got so distracted by Neil Simon. That's one of the songs that goes in my head when I walk.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, I think I figured it out. I think it's the meter, because there are just certain songs that unbidden come into my head in the rhythm that I'm walking.
Sure.
Often, and the two most common ones, for some reason, theme from The Odd Couple, and theme from Doogie Howser M.D. Neither of which I encounter in my day-to-day life. But I think it's whatever that meter is matches with my walking.
I see.
And every once in a while I'll have something else that just comes in there and does it. That's weird. That's a weird thing about me. Makes me special.
I guess so. I wonder what our listeners, what songs pop into their head while they're walking.
Songs? I don't wonder, but you could tell us. Go to the blog, themagicalbodyguy.com. I'm going to ask you a question that you're not going to answer.
Okay.
I mean, feel free to, but you're not going to.
Okay.
Did you stand up or sit down to wipe your butt?
No, I'm not going to answer that question.
I know you're not. Are you aware that there are people who do each?
I don't care what people do.
This is fascinating, though. Because
I'm not going to talk about my own bathroom habits. I don't want to know what anybody else's.
It is so personal. Nobody knows... But this is the thing. You tell most people who are not quite as freaked out to even get as near the topic as we are, as you are, if you say to them, like, did you know that some people stand up to wipe their butt? And so they'll be like, really? Whichever one it is, they don't do. And here's the thing. I learned this. There was a really, I was going to say shitty movie, but I did not mean that pun. So it was a really bad movie. I didn't watch the whole thing. It's like I turned on the TV and it was on that channel or whatever. And it specifically, it was like a National Lampoon's something or whatever. I don't know. But I turn it on and there's a guy in the bathroom and he's just standing up from the toilet and getting toilet paper juice. And a guy accidentally like halfway opens the door and he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm wiping my butt. He's like, why are you standing up? And then it cuts to them and all the friends again where they were hanging out, talking about it, and each of them is like really shocked. The ones that are sit down ones are shocked that they're stand up ones, and they're like, and it's like, because it never comes up. But I then have later told that story amongst groups of people, and people are like, no way, really? Because like, there you don't know. There's no way you would know. But so it's a thing.
Okay, but there's no way you would know. So why just assume that everybody does it the same way?
I think people assume that it is the most physically expedient.
Oh.
Or, I mean, I think there's also things like, you know, everybody toilet trains their kid. And by and large, I mean, I think most Americans assume that most parents teach their kids to do essentially the same thing with the toilet. That
but
their parents taught
I don't
them.
Remember being taught anything in particular about that.
You were probably born toilet trained. I feel like that's...
I don't remember anything about it, so...
I don't remember anything about my toilet training either.
So, I don't...
Which is weird, because I have memories from when I was still in diapers.
Although...
But I don't remember the transition.
I would think that given how... Given how little kid practice toilets are usually set up, that the natural experience, most natural experience, there would be stand, you know.
Yeah.
So that someone would learn it that way.
Well, and actually, I know a lot of kids, too, that for up to like a year or two after they were toilet trained, they still couldn't really wipe their own butt. So when they would poop, they would have their parents come and help them. Mm. But I find it interesting because by the time you're grown up, whatever you're doing is absolutely second nature. You don't think
sure,
about
right,
it.
Sure, right, that's right.
But it becomes super, like I've, when I'm in a group of people, and that's like, they, people would be like they genuinely can't understand how the other way would work.
Oh.
They're like, but if you sat, wouldn't it mean da-da-da? Or, but if you stand, doesn't it mean da-da? They just can't comprehend it. And I get that, but I think it's funny. And not long ago, I had seen a thing again where somebody, it was a thing on the internet, and they're like, some people stand up to sit to wipe their butt, some people sit down to wipe their butt. Like, and the funny thing is, what each half doesn't know the other half exists. But yeah, I find that interesting. But yeah, it is butt wiping, so it's not exactly pleasant for anybody involved. But the alternative, not doing it, is awful.
Okay.
William doesn't agree. William thinks nobody should wipe their ass ever.
Well, there's also there is a, probably the larger portion of, I shouldn't say, that there's
bidets.
Yeah, there's that.
Yes, I want to get one for you. You can get like kits that will, you don't have to get a new toilet.
Mm.
I feel like that is so much better.
A lot of people think so.
I would be all over that. You'll note, I managed to get through this without telling you, which I do.
I appreciate
that's
that.
A little gift for you.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I have to say, I'm not surprised there are multiple ways to do this. Not at all. It doesn't surprise me a bit. In fact, if you'd asked me, how many ways do you think there are to do this, I'd probably have said, well, I have no idea. Probably not just one. Because with human beings, there's never just one way to do anything.
Yeah, but there's... The thing is, this isn't just... I mean, there's more than two ways, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of those ways are going to be... Yeah, you could do it that way, but it's dumb and awkward or time-consuming or gross or whatever. And everybody seems to think that the other version is like
maybe,
that.
Maybe the reason...
So it's not just like, I didn't realize people did. It's, I didn't realize that was really a viable option.
Maybe.
Like, I understand the idea that it's possible, but I didn't understand that it was really feasible.
Maybe one reason it doesn't faze me is because when I was studying counseling psychology, I did my research paper was on the concept of anal retentive personality.
Mm.
And in my research for the subject, I found these studies that did a cross-cultural investigation of how different cultures handle defecation.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, there are cultures.
It is actually kind of interesting. I've learned a little bit of that stuff.
Well,
the observational shelf on certain countries' toilets, that's another one people get. Like, they're there is a type of flush toilet in, I think, Germany and certain parts of Scandinavia and stuff that is built such that there's a little sort of shelf, so after you defecate, you can very clearly see it there. And it's meant to be so, like, you can see if there's anything weird or whatever that, and then you flush it. And people in countries that don't have that are like, why the hell would you leave it, like, a little spot? To, like, why would you want to see it? But the people who are there are like, no, that's, like, useful to know this stuff.
It's like a health
But it's another one of those where, like, because, yeah, I think Trish originally ran into that on, like, a Reddit conversation or whatever, where the people were just like, both sides were like, wait, that's not what you have? And, of course, in certain European countries, you'll go to certain places where the public toilet, well, and actually further over into Asia, too, pretty much hole in the ground.
Well, this study that I read, like, you know, there are cultures where, you know, they'll carry their children around, and when their child, they don't, the child doesn't even have diapers, and if the child, you know, defecates or urinates or whatever, just does it, you know, and then you just clean it up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, there are other cultures that are really strict about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this, and there's a whole continuum in between. And this study felt like they could reasonably conclude that as you go from the side of the continuum where they just let the child do whatever and clean it up to the other extreme where they're really strict about it, there are clear personality differences.
Yeah.
You know, like that culture that's really strict about it, they're, you know, those adults are very, you know, obsessive about cleanliness and a lot of the characteristics you could consider anal retentive, whereas the people in this culture aren't, not just about their kids making a mess, but about anything. They're just very laid back and easygoing.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of interesting.
Well, and you can even see it within this culture in individual, because, I mean, ask people, at what age should you start toilet training? You could have a lot of different answers.
Sure.
And it comes down again to people. There are people who are like, I hate this. I need this to end. Like, I know people who have been like, I know it's early to do this, but I'm doing it because I'm really sick
of changing diapers.
Dealing with this. Yeah. And then there's others who wait way long because they're like, I just don't want to pressure them or traumatize them.
Right, right.
And everything in between. Years ago, comedian and writer Rob Schraub told this thing because it's really embarrassing, but he tells it as like a thing now. So he was not super good at that.
At what?
Wiping his butt.
Oh, okay.
Like, effectively. And it eventually came up in a very public situation and just humiliated him.
Mm.
And so he became very obsessed with it and basically ended up with, he had like a water jet or water pick thing. And basically ended up scalding his anus and having to go to the hospital because he was just so, like, after that experience, he was just like, it's going to be super squeaky clean all the time. But how the story starts is he says that his mother taught him that when you poop, you wipe 3 times, no more, no less, and you don't, like, check them, or it's 3 times, whether you need it or not, and that's it. And I'm like, wow, yeah, no, that's terrible advice. Like, that's, your mom did that wrong. Like,
you're right, it's something that people don't like to talk about or think about, and yet,
well, and it's also stuff that it started so early for us that to a certain degree we almost feel like it's instinctual.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously if you sit down and you're like, no, I was taught, but day to day it seems like, no, it's just our animal instincts of how we take care of that.
But there's lots of ways to do it, and lots of cultures do it a different way, and It does seem, you know, when I read this study, I thought, well, which is really coming first? The really strict culture and then the strict body training, or the other way around? You know, it's a real chicken of the egg thing. But I think, you know, it's kind of like when you're raising kids, you know, there are always those things where you notice when the child can see that, oh, I've got power in this situation. This is my first opportunity in my life to be defiant.
Yeah.
And there's two situations where that happens when they're young, and that's with food and with going to the bathroom.
Yep.
And if you have a to put it politely, willful child, they're going to challenge you on both of those things. And so it is a thing, right? It's not just something that Freud just made up out of the blue. There's something to that experience and handling it in a particular way that it might have an impact on the person down the road. It's really weird, actually, the more you look at it.
One of the neighbor kids is utterly without guile. Even when he tries, like, he's a horrible liar. And he hit an age where, like, he discovered, you know, kids hit a point where they discover that you can say things that aren't true.
Right.
Like, there's a moment. And that becomes another one of these power
things. Power things, that's
like,
right.
I can lie, but he's a terrible liar. But it also means it's really obvious what he fixates on and when.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been really funny for all of us. Like, when he got really obsessed with poop, and he thought poop was the most hilarious thing, he wanted to talk about poop. And then when he was really obsessed with wieners, and, you know, stuff like that. I'm sure he's going to have when he's really obsessed with sex, you know, and all those. But it's very interesting because he is so transparent. Like, it's very textbook. Like, he is not hiding at all the fact that right now all he wants to talk about is wieners. And if you say wieners, he's going to laugh until he passes out. He thinks it's awesome. If you go to him and say poop wiener, his head will explode. Like, so it's interesting to watch that progression in him. But yeah, you know how we know that we're the evil podcast?
No.
We spent 20 minutes talking about poop right up front.
It's a fact of life.
Suck it, non-evil people.
What can we say?
We do what we want.
I think people are often surprised when they really think about it, how certain everyday things in their life that they think don't make a difference. Well, like you were saying, people just take for granted that
they
you do this.
They think are universal.
Yeah, they think are universal, or they think it doesn't have any impact on their life. It's like, you do this differently than other people do it, and so it does have an impact on your life.
Two big ones that hit me is not everyone in the world smiles, or at least, and specifically, it does not always mean, it
right.
doesn't necessarily mean the same thing.
Right.
Which that one blew my mind. I really thought that was like an animal instinct thing. And then the one that super throws me is there are legit cultures, and not like tiny cultures, like big parts of like the Mideast and things, where nodding and shaking your head mean the exact opposite of what they mean for us. And I'm like, holy shit, that's just mean. Like somebody, whoever invented the second version was an asshole.
So, we've talked about this before. Do we really need to do better in emphasizing cultural anthropology and education? Because it just seems like American kids especially are raised to think that the way Americans do things is either the only way or the best way.
But
and there's just no open-mindedness about it.
Mazzucchini's hierarchy of needs here. Hold on. First, we need to do better at teaching our children that the rest of the world exists. Then we can get into how they're culturally different. Because at this point, I remember talking about this back in college when I was in the UK. I was telling my parents major news items. Because in the US, international news was like the 2 minutes out of the hour right at the end.
But the thing is, there are so many cultures in the United States. I mean, that might be something we have to teach them first, is that, hey, the United States is multicultural.
And I do actually feel like that a lot of TV shows and things are doing some of that.
Maybe that's true.
But I just really want us to break out of, like, you know, there's more to... Well, because I read those, like, not always right and not always... So many where people legit get confused and even angry that people in another country that they traveled to as tourists don't take U.S. currency and don't speak English. And I don't just mean Canada. I mean going to goddamn Finland, and they're pissed off that they don't speak English and that they don't take U.S.
Sure,
money.
But, I mean, I'm not even
confused by
I'm not even looking for people to know things about other cultures. I just want them to be aware that there are.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just this whole notion that when you don't know what other people do, and so you just assume that they do it the same as you do, and rather than saying, well, I don't know what they do, So I can't assume they do what I do or not.
And that if they do something different, that they're the weird one.
Exactly. The norm. That's all I want, is for people just to be open-minded about it. I don't care if they know these things, just that they are open-minded about it.
That is a very basic and very crucial first step that we suck at.
But I wonder why that is. I mean, people want to say that that's how human beings are, but I don't think that's true. I think that's something our culture does.
No, it's bullshit, because other countries don't have this problem.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
I mean, I'm sure some of them
do. No, yeah, yeah, but...
But I know far too many countries that are super aware. I remember the first time I watched the opening ceremonies of the Commonwealth Games. I remember it because it was the first time I had ever heard that there was a thing called the Commonwealth Games. And it's huge. Many countries participate. It is an internationally known event. Like, it's a thing. It's huge. Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Right. I was 22. Had never heard of this thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But we're evil, so we like that.
But like I say, it's one thing to just not know. And that's okay. There's things you don't know. It's a whole other thing to, in a way, assume you do know.
Yeah.
And that's where, for whatever reason, our culture fills in that.
To assume that you know all you need to know.
Yeah, where
Everybody's
does that come from?
Again, it gets a little chicken and egg, because it now manifests to a degree. Most other countries make sure that most of their people can speak English. Not because so much of the world speaks English as their native tongue, but because Americans can't be bothered to learn any other language.
But I think our culture teaches people not to be comfortable with not knowing things. Like, you if you don't know something, that's bad or wrong or makes you vulnerable.
Only if it's something important.
Well, right,
and
but
our
I think,
culture teaches that nothing outside the U.S. border is important.
But I think that if you drill it into people's heads that it's bad if you don't know things, one of the psychological defense mechanisms you're going to have for natural ignorance, because you're always ignorant of something, is to fill those pockets of ignorance with certainty that, I don't know what those people do, but they must do the same thing I do.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to fill that with something. So maybe it's part of a defense mechanism that we have in our culture that teaches people it's bad not to know things.
Well, and we are not alone in this. The world, this is a world issue. Everybody pretty much has convinced us that we are the U.S. is the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
And so
we believe
we're the dominant culture. So of course we are the archetype. So
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
we're doing is how other people do it. And if they don't do it, that's because they're weird and backwards.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And ignorant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't like it.
No.
I don't think it's good. I think...
But soon our country's going to completely implode, and then...
Probably. I mean, that is the pattern of empires.
I recently heard of an old John Oliver bit. So it doesn't tie into any of the current craziness. Talking about how... He was talking about the British Empire. And he's like, and that's over. We gave that to you guys. Meaning the U.S. He's like, a while back, we handed that over to you. You've been the big imperial power. And probably in about 20 to 50 years, you'll hand it over to China. And China will carry it through to Armageddon, basically. And I was like, that sounds pretty legit.
Sad.
I feel like that's kind of how it's going to go. It's hard to be depressed when you're evil. Usually it's because things are too good.
Yeah, too good. Which makes us feel bad. But then
I love feeling sad. And that makes me happy.
I think we're going to do that
Apparently,
every time.
That's
now.
My impression of Pee Wee Herman
doing an impression of Oscar the Grouch. All right, I just drew some from that.
How dare you.
Jazz asks.
Jazz talks words.
Can a story have diverse representation and still support cultural norms? Supergirl, for example. Well?
No, Supergirl doesn't exist.
Yes, Supergirl is a good example.
I know, but I do find it... the question is a very intriguing one that could spark some very intriguing conversation on our part. I find the wording weird, because the answer is yes, you just gave us an example.
Well, here's the thing,
like,
about
like
that.
The only way I can say no is if I refuse to believe that Supergirl's a really show.
Well, there are people who think that it would be hard to do both of those things because cultural norms in our culture anyway, not speaking for any other culture, just ours, typically excludes most groups. So it's really hard to have representation and not violate those norms.
The problem is here, cultural norms aren't monolithic.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Supergirl or whatever.
Or anything, yeah.
Is absolutely perpetuating certain cultural norms.
Yeah, yeah.
Including, I think, some that are running counter to other things they're doing. I mean, every TV show and movie made in America has those little things. But obviously it's also breaking certain cultural norms. I recently, last year or so, I think if you put the pieces together, you might be able to figure out when, I have been really struggling with the concept that what we believe are cultural norms and cultural opinions and what pop culture tells us are cultural norms and cultural opinions, and what cultural norms and cultural opinions are actually held by the citizenry are not necessarily the same.
That's right.
To a very large degree, but it gets very messy because then pop culture tells us these are the beliefs you should have, and we attempt to adopt those beliefs.
Well,
sometimes.
Our interpretation of them.
Yes. And then other times, so it becomes... I have a hard time defining what's a cultural norm at this point because of that. But, to me, it's a numbers game. Yes, you can have diverse representation. Yes, you can still support cultural norms. You won't be supporting the cultural norm that movies and TV have shitty diverse representation. But you can still support a lot of other ones.
Yeah, right.
I mean, especially, representation is a very specific slice of cultural normitude. I know that's not a word, but I just invented it, and I like it. Normitude. I am super going to start using that a lot to define the state of normalization. I'm going to call it normitude.
Normitude?
Normitude. Normitude of the North. No, probably just normitude. But yeah, representation is a particular slice of that pie. There's a lot of other shit going on there. But yeah, I absolutely think it's possible. And I think it's becoming more and more common. There is...
Well, one could ask, when you're representing, what are you representing? Right? Because let's say you have a story, and you are very careful... to make sure that certain types of people are represented, or that you don't over-represent a particular type, mm-hmm. right? But what does that mean? Just that they're visible, like you can visually see them doing things?
Yeah.
What are they going to be doing?
Yeah.
What kind of relationships are they going to be having? Once you've decided you've got your representation, now when you actually write out the lines and the relationships for that person, are they going to conform to stereotypes in relation to that person? Or did you already have the script written and then afterwards just randomly assign these things so that it would be all mixed up? So it's complicated.
Yes. There is...
And then you can still do something that inadvertently makes somebody of that group angry because they say, well, did you realize there's a deeply held stereotype about that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize there was.
And you can absolutely hit into a no-win situation where you are attempting to show representation for an underrepresented demographic. Whatever choice you make, there are probably going to be members of that demographic who are going to think what you did was discriminatory, and others who are going to think what you did was awesome, regardless of what you pick. Because...
Sure.
not everybody's offended by the same stuff, even when it's addressed at a specific, like, minority group.
Right.
You
know, like, for example, if I decide, you know what, I want to raise the... I want there to be adequate representation of Asians or whatever in this. First of all, saying that feels problematic, just saying it like that. It's what does that even mean? Who does that cover? What does that person look like? And how are we treating Asians as a whole group, you know, when we're talking about several different countries, and where does it cut off, and who is Asian, well, Asian, and who's not?
And I mean, and this is a good thing, as we can get more and more specific, and this is what happens in a lot of things. This is why, if you go back to, like, first wave feminism, it was, a lot of it was fairly straightforward, because there were big things that needed to be done.
Yeah.
And now it can get, so, like, we're gonna hit a point where we've got great Asian representation, and yet a pattern will develop, at least in some people's minds, where Cambodians are being terribly underrepresented.
Sure.
And that'll be legit, because we have worked on these other things, and now we got a new thing.
Okay. But now, let's say, I'm going to do this with Asians. Let's say I figured out what kind Asian of Asians or whatever. So what is my Asian character going to do? Is it are male or are female Asians more represented or less represented?
Mm-hmm.
Are, if I make the Asian character an engineer, is that stereotypical because they stereotypically do so much better in science? If I make them a fighter, is that stereotypical because they're stereotypically ninjas or whatever? So then what can I make them that won't be a stereotype?
And the races are goddamn mixing nowadays, so the whole thing's just gonna be a mess now.
But you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
As soon as you start asking these questions and you really do care about representation, and, which I'm not saying that... none of this is to argue that you shouldn't do it.
No.
It's just to point out that when you start doing it, it can get a little complicated. And
It's not a simple thing. It's still worth doing.
Yeah, but come on. Absolutely worth doing, but it's not a simple thing.
To speak directly to this, and in general, I consider this a good thing. I've recently been seeing trailers for a comedy that is not out yet.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to be funny. But it very much looks like it's going to be a sitcom. And sitcoms, sort of due to their trope-filled nature, have a lot of problematic shit in them. And I sort of accept that. Sitcoms just... That tends to be a thing. It's a formula. And there's a lot of the formula I see in these trailers here. But it's basically about a group of friends. And interesting point in this, two of the main characters are an interracial couple, and two other of the main characters are a gay couple, and that is not, no one, it's not a thing. Like, it's not even brought up.
Hmm.
Like, it is absolutely normal to the point of being uninteresting.
Hmm.
And so, a show that looks like it's going to be perpetuating a lot of cultural norms, including some that are going to annoy me, as a lot of sitcoms can.
Sure.
Also has these two, at least in my lifetime, incredibly progressive things, and it's not the point of the story. Nobody's trying to pat themselves on the back over this. That's just what they cast.
Just
and I mean,
there.
I guess with the gay couple, that's, they decided, you know what? We got this many people, probably got a gay couple.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah,
love that. The interracial thing, I genuinely think they just cast the people they wanted to, and they happen to be of these different races, and I love that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you can, and I think more people are, and I think that's how you move forward. It's a lot harder to tell somebody, you know what, fix all of this shit for your movie. It's like, no. Try and fix some shit, and then maybe the next movie can fix a little more shit.
Well, and we also have to allow people to make mistakes at it.
Yes.
I mean, otherwise they just won't even try.
And we're also aspiring for a place that is so diverse that you can do any combination. We want to hit a point in our world where you can have an all-white cast, and that was just the particular creative choice that film did.
Right.
We are so far from that.
Oh,
people.
So far.
But that's my point, is like, you want to be able to, right now, I'm just excited for a TV show that has a lot of black people both in front of and behind the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now, people are just excited for Tyler Perry's movies because he's giving black actors jobs.
Yeah.
And that is admirable, and that is awesome, and he should keep doing it. What no one has ever been saying is that Tyler Perry's movies are at all good.
Right.
But he keeps making them, and I keep wanting him to, because he's doing something that it's sad that it is so desperately needed, but it is so
but
desperately
it is,
needed,
yeah.
And other people are not doing it, and do it. And good on you, Tyler Perry. And, you know, maybe I don't fully understand coming from my own cultural background, but in general, your movies seem pretty shitty. But keep it up. And then eventually it becomes the norm, and then people can make non-shitty versions, and that'll be good, too. Although, actually, that thing where that woman got punished with AIDS for cheating, that was some bullshit, dude. I feel like I'm actually talking to Tyler Perry. I don't usually feel like that, but I feel like he's going to listen to the podcast, and he's going to hear my thing. That bit in, I think it was in Temptation, where the woman cheated and her punishment was she got AIDS. Yeah, that was fucked up, dude. That's bullshit. You need to get right with yourself. As Madea would say.
Do we have time for another question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we actually going to do it? All right, fine.
Well, might as well.
No, you're just asking a logistical question. I didn't know it was going to become a whole thing. This is from Coffee. Describe the tribal characteristics within yourself that you would like to strengthen and develop. Well, I've got this awesome tattoo.
I think everyone has tribal characteristics, and I don't think you can weaken or strengthen them, really. I mean, we've talked about how you feel like your tribal sense is very muted, so
well,
to speak.
Yeah.
But when I think of tribal characteristics...
Actually, technically, we didn't talk about that, but okay.
But when I think of tribal characteristics, I think of things that, that you know, I suppose they can be things that are very, like really sort of dominating a person's personality or not, but they're all kind of there. Like, tribal characteristics. Well, I mean, what does Coffee mean by tribal characteristics? Do you know what she means?
Why the hell would I know? We're not in the same universe. I assume this isn't evil Coffee. I'm just trying to picture Coffee with a goatee. That's weird.
I mean, it's not just a matter of needing other people in your life. That's not as simple as that.
Well, no, but I do think a group identity, to me, is the foundation of what I would consider tribalism. And, I mean, it branches from there. You know, we really quickly hit the us and them thing, which...
Yeah.
I understand why it's there. Like sociobiologically, still don't like it and still try and work against it, but yeah, it's a group identity thing, and I didn't realize apparently I'm kind of weird. I'm very individualized when it comes to identity. I don't in general, I'm less into the idea that people are like me. In general, I like that I'm different. I mean, there are exceptions when there's things like, I consider this belief to be very important, and my friend here doesn't share it. Then I'm sad.
Well,
but just overall...
I'm not sure it's really about... group identity. I'm not sure that that's entirely about or substantially about ways that everybody in the group is the same. I do think I think it has a little bit to do with the things that you agree on, but not necessarily in a way that takes away a person's individual identity or contribution to the group. Kind of like if people get together to build a house and everybody's job is different. Where their their being, I guess, intersects is we're building this house.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make the cabinet maker not a cabinet maker and the electrician not an electrician, or take away their uniqueness or the fact that they're bringing something very special and unique to the enterprise. So, I agree.
No, but I think the tribal aspect is this group, we're the house builders. What can you say about the house builders? We build houses.
Right. That's right.
I don't like being part of the house builders.
Oh, okay.
I like saying I'm actually the hut builder. I'm the only guy. I build huts by myself. Next to the house.
Okay.
But my wife is something of an exception, but that is only partial and has grown over time. I've come to appreciate our identity as a couple, and that sometimes that can mean things, that we can be greater than the sum of our parts.
Right, that's right.
But overall, I'm not saying I don't have some of it. I still, my circle of friends, I like to think, you know, oh, when something new comes up that I have not encountered before and I have to decide what I think of it, there are often cases where, maybe not consciously, but my brain is like, so of course, my friends will probably end up feeling the same about that. Especially if it's something like political or something like that. Like, of course they're going to. And sometimes, it is so obvious that that's true, but then there's other times, no. And I think for a lot of people, and I've experienced that too, depending on what it is, to hear that somebody in your tribe has an opposing view of something that is a very strongly held important belief, it can be freaky and can cause one to get very defensive about that.
It can be.
But I don't know. The closest I can come to giving a real answer to this question is I believe that tribal perspectives can aid in one wanting to help one's fellow people, one's community, I guess, is how we do this here. And I do wish I felt more of that. I really don't feel that a lot. And I wish I was, but I mean, to me, that's a little bit of me just saying, I wish I was a better person, which I feel like is just sort of an empty answer.
Well, I think it's a common thing. This is difficult to talk about because a lot of people have very specific ideas of what tribal means and tribalistic and tribalism. But my understanding of healthy tribal relationships is the people in the tribe want to help one another. And not always in ways that are going to be comfortable for one another either. Like, you know, I want you to tell me when I'm being a jerk so I can stop being a jerk. And I'm going to tell you when you're being a jerk so you can stop being a jerk. That's one way we're going to help each other. And I'm not sure it always has so much to do with being a helpful person more generally, like to people you don't even know. The people in the tribe are going to be there for one another in a variety of ways, practical ways, you know, intellectual ways, emotional ways. I think it's a healthy tribe. It's in their best interest to not be suspicious of outside tribes and to be helpful of outside tribes because they want outside tribes to be helpful to them. But I think primarily they're there for just each other. And that's fine, because if everybody's part of a tribe where everyone's looking out for each other, then this tribe doesn't really have to look out for that tribe. Even except if this tribe is in trouble, this tribe will help because they want that tribe to help when they're in trouble, and so it all works out. You see what I'm saying? But I think primarily the tribal impulse is to take care of your own, but not in a closed-minded, selfish like us versus them way, just in a, oh, this is what we do in a tribe way. See what I mean?
Yeah. That gets tricky when you find out that other tribe is perfectly happy the way they functioned it, but they enslave a certain demographic of their tribe and make them live as lower class people. The more direct version of this is people in an apartment building hear noises from another apartment that make them think somebody might be being hurt.
Yeah, hurt, sure, yeah.
And there's the argument, and I hold to this one personally. You fucking do something about
right,
it.
Right, sure, sure.
But the other common one that I think is much more tied into the sense of tribalism is it's not our business, it's not our family, it's not, we don't know them, we don't know what's going on with them, it's not our place to decide to judge them via the method of calling the cops. And but like I said, that's not the view I ascribe to, but it's also a view, I understand that.
Sure, sure, but that reasoning is often more complicated than it sounds on the surface. Like, yes, those sentiments are expressed, like, for all we know, this is a perfectly fine thing for them. Maybe this is a cultural thing or whatever.
Yeah.
But often there are a lot of unspoken things going on when those things are being said that indicate that maybe the person doesn't entirely even believe that. But this is something they're going to tell themselves to convince themselves it's okay to not get involved with that situation. Which I'm not saying that those situations aren't actually complicated and complex, because certainly I've been in situations where I intervened in those things and the person who I thought was being harmed was probably more mad at me than anybody else.
But that doesn't necessarily mean they weren't being harmed either.
Or that I shouldn't have done what I did.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, yes,
but then there
lots
are definitely
of layers
times where you should, I mean...
Yeah, there's lots of layers of complication.
There. For every answer you have to that situation, there are going to be times when it's the right one and times when it's
wrong. No, that's right, that's right.
But it's... That's when the tribal concept breaks down for me.
Well, every concept breaks down at some point or other.
Because I feel like my options are to a certain degree wall out people outside my tribe. Like I said, you know, you interact with them or respect them or whatever, but there's a line, like your family, you're not,
sure,
kind
sure,
of thing.
Sure, sure,
sure. Which feels weird to me. To like decide these people that I may not even know and might like way better than the people in my tribe, not gonna do it. Or the alternative is then you sort of embrace them and then it becomes a bigger tribe.
Sure. Or two interlocking tribes,
yes.
And you are one of the people that is
but,
a bridge.
But
there.
That can get. But over time, I feel like then that just builds, and then you're just. I feel like that's what has happened, and now we're in this giant globalist thing.
Well, I mean.
I don't feel like it's a sustainable position.
Well, but it's there are a lot of things that have brought us to where we are now. I mean, you know, I live in a neighborhood. I don't know any of my neighbors.
Yeah.
I'm not inclined even to know any of my neighbors. I could tell you, I could list a lot of reasons that that's true. For example, we've lived there longer than anybody else because it's one of those neighborhoods that mostly are like starter homes for new families or people.
And so they move out quick, yeah.
Or people just, so I mean, the people next to us, we've had probably three or four or five different families since we've lived there. So, and I could just, all kinds of reasons, but there's also just cultural reasons, right? You know, if you try to get to know your neighbors, or you've tried it before, or I have, and it just doesn't work. Because
except when I was a kid, because that's what happens here too. We know the people next door because they're our friends before they even moved there.
Yeah.
But like the people over there, they have lived there at least a couple years now. I have never so much as spoken to them, and nobody. That's not a thing.
But yeah, but you see
at this point. But no. But my point is, when I was younger, that was not the case. You knew all of your neighbors, and some you liked and some you didn't. But you knew them and you interacted with them. And everybody knew everybody.
Right, but over time, our culture, I mean, even when I was a kid, it was a little more like that. Of course, I mean, a small
they
town.
They were 12 miles away.
Well, a small town, everybody was related and whatever. But
yeah.
But our culture puts so much premium on the household as
yeah.
its own specific unit. That's one thing. Also, we really encourage people to be mobile. I mean, it's so much more common today, even than it was 30 years ago, for kids to move away. and to live far away from their parents. Yeah. So that you're not surrounded by people you know, or that people you went to school with. That's another thing is, here, you know, over in Coralville, where I live, there's a lot of people who have lived in those places for 20, 25 years. And yeah, they know their neighbors because they went to school with those people. But over time, you get families that move in. They don't stay there very long. Their kids move away. And it's just our culture has really encouraged a kind of situation where, you know, households are very isolated from one another. And, you know, that's not how it used to be. And I don't think it's a step forward, but I mean that's just where our culture has led, and it's where the cultural pressures have kind of pushed people to be. So I don't know what that means. I don't know where that's going, but I don't think that I think it's something our culture has done specifically. I don't think that's what every culture does, or maybe every imperialistic culture does it. I don't know.
Recently, for reasons that aren't relevant here, so I won't go into them, I found myself recounting all the significant life events and things and experiences and growths and changes that have happened to me since I went to college, since I moved away from home, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And a few things I had forgotten, and then they came back, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was a big deal. And then a few of them I didn't even realize until I was going through this list.
Mm.
And one of those that kind of surprised me is literally every close friend I have, I met after that. I met in adulthood.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I still keep contact with other ones and stuff, and they're wonderful or whatever, but like they're not in my life.
Right.
But like everybody that like I consider a good friend, I literally met after college.
That's interesting.
And that's fascinating to me. And I mean, I've discovered this before. Like, yeah, I don't stick to groups well. And I'm okay with that. I don't know what that's about.
Well, I'm not sure.
But I don't feel like I'm one of those, you know, I don't feel like I'm super individualist. I mean, like, I cherish relationships and connections to people and emotional and physical intimacy,
right, but
and all that. I just, yeah, I don't have to, I don't know. I can
tribes aren't as robust as they used to be, right? I mean, tribes used to be, first of all, there were a lot of kinship relations in tribes, but there was also a lot of, you know, survival aspects wrapped up in how the tribe worked.
Often a lot of physical isolation.
Right.
And
now, that's not to say that kinship, tribes, and survival are the only ties that make tribalism work, such that you take those away, you don't have tribalism. But if you
uniforms.
But I'm saying there are plenty of other things that can make robust tribes, but our culture doesn't emphasize those things. And it rather de-emphasizes them, you know, like well religion is one, but that might not be a very good example for you.
No, I do sometimes think that's part of it. I do think that if I'd been raised in some sort of church going situation, that would be different, because a lot of people, when I find like their sense of community, it often goes back to that kind of thing.
But there's just a lot of aspects of tribal life that are sort of pushed away in our culture, and so it means that the opportunities you have to join groups, for example, that might not be very appealing because the groups themselves they're not very deep, or they're not very robust, or they're just not offering you anything that's enticing.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that to be true. I don't belong to any particular group either, but I feel a loss in that myself personally.
No, I do too.
Yeah,
but it's an active repellent on my. I get plenty of opportunities.
Hmm.
Community activism is a big one. Like I occasionally, because I have a lot of close people in my life that do get into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I will accompany them. And I think those things are great, and I wish that I wanted to do them. But I don't want to do them. And some of it's laziness, but some of it is just like, I don't know, I don't feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe it is that thing, because in a lot of those situations, it becomes a single point of connection.
Yeah.
We're all together because of this issue or this thing.
Right.
Rather than we have an interwoven life.
Exactly.
That does.
That's exactly right.
Like that. Which is why I am so comfortable in my tribe of my wife.
Of two, yeah.
Because we do. Like, there's so many things we have in common.
And there's nothing wrong with a tribe of two. That's just not how human beings did it for thousands of years. And so if you do have a tribe of two, you're very grateful for it and you like it. But I do think you feel a sense of something is missing, because two, it's like it's, there should be more than that. Well, and not just that, but one other person can't be everything you need in social relationships. It's just, that just can't be true.
I mean, no, we have puppets. Mix it up a little.
Okay, well, that'll help, sure.
We are out of time, thank goodness. Go to the blog, tell us what tribe you think we should belong. I don't know. Tell us what you think about tribes. Also, does Supergirl exist? I don't know. You tell me.
Other than as a TV show? Or
no, does the TV show exist?
Oh, okay.
Vote.
I thought you were asking if Supergirl, the superhero, actually existed.
The side that gets the most votes will determine reality. So,
as
like in America,
as
Idol.
Per usual, yep.
If you think Supergirl really is a show, text yes to, all right. And then come back next week, and hopefully there'll be those other jackasses. All right, let's go bug the neighboring tribe.
All right.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.